Beware the folly of doing whatever seems right in your own eyes. Welcome, everyone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Our host is author, teacher, and itinerant speaker, Kenneth Wong. Samson, the tragic hero of the ages. Well, you will recall last time Ken introduced this character to us and told of his calling to be a Nazarite and his mission to be a judge in Israel even before he was born. Ken then revealed Samson's stubborn streak and weakness for women, which culminated in a disastrous marriage and a bitter annulment. Well, today we hear more of the escapades that characterize the legacy of this man. And in just a moment, Kenneth concludes his reflection with a focus on Samson's life and death in part two of Squandered Strength.
Hello, everyone. It's good to be with you. We'll continue with the exciting story of Samson. In the second section of his life as recorded in Judges, chapter 14. At the start of his wedding feast, in verse 12, Samson said to the 30 companions who were invited to make up the wedding party, "Let me pose a riddle to you. If you can correctly solve and explain it to me within 7 days of the feast, then I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing." By posing a riddle based on something that had just happened by the way, he was really being wise in his own conceits. But in doing this, he was making himself vulnerable to unnecessary trouble. It's the beginning of an example in a long list of further frivolous and impulsive acts that he seemed to be prone to with dire consequences. And in this particular case, we find that at the end, it annulled his marriage even before the wedding feast was over. Now, for 3 days, they could not explain the riddle, but it came to pass on the seventh day that they said to Samson's wife, "Entice your husband that he may explain the riddle to us, or else we will burn you and your father's house with fire. Have you invited us in order to take what is ours? Is that not so?" We begin here to see his weakness in being worn down by the repeated imploring of a woman, which is a pattern that was going to return to haunt him time and again. Verse 17, "Now she had wept on him the 7 days while their feast lasted." What a miserable wedding feast that must have been. And it happened on the seventh day that he told her, because she pressed him so much. Then she explained the riddle to the sons of her people, and Samson had no choice but to honor the challenge that he had posed. And once again, we find in verse 19 that the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily. This was his first kill of 30 Philistines, but it had nothing to do with the cause of his people Israel, nor for the glory of God. It was to fulfill the demands that his own folly had brought upon him. What a great squandering of the strength that the Spirit of God had laid on him. And this second section of his life ended on this sad note in the last verse 20. "And Samson's wife was given to his companion, who had been his best man." So it was a botched marriage that never was. It was a wedding feast filled with tears and agony and ending with anger and frustration. Now, Samson was from the tribe of Dan. It makes one wonder how accurately Jacob's prophetic blessing on his deathbed for all his 12 sons were, and especially for Dan, with regard to Samson as one of the descendants in that tribe. For this is what we read in Genesis chapter 49, verse 16. "Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel." And that was what Samson became, a judge in Israel. Verse 17, "Dan shall be a serpent by the way, a viper by the path that bites the horse's heels, so that its rider shall fall backward." That's a pretty vivid description of what Samson always tended to do. He was always avenging himself and exacting payback on his enemies. But in another sense, he strongly resembles the characteristics prescribed for Reuben, the firstborn. Again, in Genesis 49, verse 3, it was said concerning Reuben, his firstborn, my might and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. But then in verse 4, unstable as water, you shall not excel. That pretty much describes the sad story of Samson as well. He had the excellency of dignity and power and strength, but never attained to that fully. But instead, he forfeited it because he was unstable as water. Let's now move on to chapter 15 of Judges, where we are given some snapshots of his life. It begins with the first three verses, with a little spillover from his botched marriage feast. It's not over when it's over. If we do not learn from something disastrous and put it behind us, that disastrous wedding returned to haunt him because he continued to pursue this inordinate affection. And in verse 1, we read that after a while, in the time of wheat harvest, it happened that Samson visited his wife with a young goat. Her father said, I really thought that you thoroughly hated her. Therefore, I gave her to your companion. And once again, we see Samson reacting with an impulsive and an impatient spirit. He vented his anger now in vengeance on the Philistines in another one of his unorthodox ways. We are told in the following verses that he went out and caught 300 foxes, which must have been in itself quite an incredible feat. He tied them in pairs at their tails and put a torch of fire between them. And when you have 150 pairs of foxes tied together with their tails about to catch fire, they will run fast and scatter like wildfire. So when he released them into the fields of the Philistines, it quickly burned up all the standing grain as well as the shocks of grain harvested, the vineyards and the olive groves. In verse 6, the Philistines said, "Who has done this?" Clearly it was not the Spirit of God, but the spite of Samson. Samson's heated reaction invited an equally heated retaliation from the Philistines. So the Philistines came up and burned her and her father with fire. That's what always happens when we try to fight fire with fire. Everybody gets burned. You could say that this sad episode ended with one wedding and two funerals. From verse 9 on to the end of chapter 15, we read of the events that led to what might be considered as the big break in Samson's life. The Philistines encamped in Judah and deployed themselves against Lehi. Now, what is remarkable here is that it is Samson's own people who decided that they didn't really want to have anything to do with him. They would rather deliver him up to the Philistines than to stand with him. In the eyes of his own people, he was more of a troublemaker than a deliverer. They saw all that was happening as the result of his own personal feud with the Philistines. He wasn't fighting for Israel, but instead he brought reproach through his own indiscretions. And it took 3,000 of the men of Judah to go down to the cleft of the rock of Etam to persuade Samson to surrender himself to the Philistines. But they said to him, "We have come down to arrest you, that we may deliver you into the hand of the Philistines." But this also showed the cowardly subservience of the men of Judah by this time to their oppressors, the Philistines. Instead of confronting them and resisting them, they chose to deliver Samson into their hands. Samson had no problem with that. What he needed was not a weapon, but just an occasion to be brought in the midst of the Philistines, so as to be able to inflict the biggest and the main destruction of his enemy so far. Reading on in verse 14, "When he came to Lehi, the Philistines came shouting against him. Then the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and the ropes that were on his arms became like flax that is burned with fire, and his bonds broke loose from his hands." The Philistines must have gasped, for they had never seen anything like this. But that was nothing compared to the terror and the destruction that followed. Verse 15, "Samson found a fresh jawbone of a donkey, reached out his hand and took it, and killed 1,000 men with it." Once again, we see the Spirit of the Lord coming mightily upon him. and enduing him with supernatural strength. This time it was not only for his self-preservation, but also for the vindication of Israel's honor. It was to show his own people that here is one whom God had raised to be their deliverer and their judge. In this greatest display of supernatural strength so far, Samson not only broke free from his two new ropes that bound him, but he killed 1,000 Philistines single-handedly with whatever that he could lay his hands on that might serve as a weapon in the form of a fresh jawbone of a donkey. So this was his big break. It was his main claim to fame in his life so far, and it came by default rather than by design. In spite of his great strength, it must have taken quite some time and a lot of expenditure of energy to kill 1,000 Philistines single-handedly. And then he became very thirsty. So he cried out to the Lord and said, "You have given me this great deliverance by the hand of your servant. And now shall I die of thirst and fall into the hand of the uncircumcised?" Although Samson was endowed with great supernatural strength, he was still like any other man in other ways. He could still die of thirst, despite overpowering 1,000 of his enemies. Verse 19, "So God split the hollow place that is in Lehi, and water came out, and he drank. And his spirit returned, and he revived." What we note here is that both are God's provisions. It was the same God who strengthened his hand in battle, as well as quenched his thirst to preserve his life. Chapter 15 ends with this last verse in verse 20. "And he judged Israel 20 years in the days of the Philistines." This was the big break, which made his own people sit up and take notice that, hey, here is someone we better make sure is on our side, who can be our champion, our judge, and our deliverer. And that's what he became. He judged Israel for some 20 years, from around 1085 BC to 1065 BC. We know nothing more about his 20-year judgeship. If all that can be said about one's life or service is just the number of years lived or served, that could be a sad statement of its insignificance. Let's move on into chapter 16 for the last phase of his life, his death. Once again, in the first three verses, we have a little incident which served as a prelude to a bigger one. Here we find Samson still persisting in the lust of the flesh. He continued to frequent foreign territory for foreign harlots, this time in the Philistine city of Gaza. Now this is not boldness, it's brashness. There is no faith here but folly. He invited trouble through his continued self-indulgence. In so doing, he presumed upon his phenomenal strength and began to throw all caution to the wind. In this, I suppose, he was a child of his age. He epitomized the spirit of the dark ages of the judges. He did what was right in his own eyes. Well, his enemies needn't have waited all night until the dawn to catch him. For at midnight, Samson arose and he walked up to the city gates, took hold of the doors together with the two gateposts, pulled them out, bar and all, put them on his shoulders, and marched right out of the city and carried them up to the top of the hill ahead. He was coming right out to them. And I suppose when they saw this, they just gasped in utter amazement and just scampered away. Nobody wanted to stand in the way of that incredible hulk and be crushed by a steamroller. From verse 4 to the end of chapter 16, we have the final episode of Samson's life. Once again, we see him fall for another woman called Delilah in the valley of Sorek. And the lords of the Philistines worked through her to entice him to try to find out and unravel the secret of Samson's strength. And once more, we see the same pattern of weakness shown by Samson. This was his besetting sin, his Achilles heel, which finally brought him down, his weakness for women. He was unable to fend off the repeated advances of the enemy through Delilah, as long as he remained in the place of compromise instead of consecration. You cannot help succumbing to temptation. No matter how strong you are, if you deliberately choose to be in the place of sin and temptation. This is what Paul reminds us strongly of in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 6. Now these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. And that's one of the reasons why we study Old Testament examples like Samson. And in that chapter, he goes on to say in verse 8, don't let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did. Verse 9, nor let us tempt Christ as some of them also tempted. Verse 11, now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it. Back to Judges 16, we find Delilah trying to persuade Samson repeatedly, without success for 3 times, until finally his defense broke and the secret was out. And this time it did not work as before. Verse 20, she said, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. So he awoke from his sleep and said, I will go out as before at other times and shake myself free. But he did not know that the Lord had departed from him. It showed how spiritually insensitive his repeated trysts with sexual sin had made him by this time. On this occasion, Samson pushed the boundary just one step too far, and he went beyond the point of no return this time. You cannot indulge in sin continually as if it made no difference. You may be able to contain it up to a point, beyond which the dam bursts and breaks, and everything washes over and gets washed out. So Samson was captured by the Philistines, who blinded him and put him in prison to grind. We have the final showdown from verse 23 to the end. There was a day when some 3,000 Philistines, including all the top brass, the lords, were gathered under one roof in the temple of their god Dagon. Samson was brought out to entertain them. They stationed him between the pillars, and Samson asked the lad who was holding him by the hand to let him feel the pillars which support the temple so that he can lean on them. And he lifted up a final prayer in verse 28. O Lord God, remember me, I pray. Strengthen me, I pray, just this once, O God, that I may with one blow take vengeance on the Philistines for my 2 eyes. To the end, Samson was still more motivated by personal vengeance for his own 2 eyes which had been blinded by the Philistines. Then he was motivated by zeal for God and his glory or for the cause of Israel. But yet that final prayer was a prayer of faith. He could have just continued grinding and resigned himself hopelessly that this was the end of him. But he did not. And if there was one citation which could be made in that great Hebrews 11 Hall of Faith concerning Samson, it would be this. It would be, by faith Samson, despite the fact that he was blinded and imprisoned, lifted his voice to God, and leaning upon his everlasting arms, pushed with all his might on the twin pillars and brought the house of Dagon and the Philistines down. This was his final act of faith, for which he was most well remembered. He killed more in his death than in his life, with one last huff and puff at the 2 central pillars, which literally brought the house down. Alas, he learned too late the great secret of true spiritual strength of the Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 9 and 10. My strength is made perfect in weakness, for when I am weak, then I am strong. His death amongst his enemies was a sad commentary on his compromised witness through his many dalliances with the Philistine women. It's a tragic testimony to what better things might have been had he remained wholly consecrated to God and not squandered his strength on satisfying his own lusts. Every one of us has likewise been endowed with some measure of strength and energies in our life. Let us not squander them until it's too late, but spend it to fulfill God's purpose in our lives. And may the Lord refresh you through His presence and reach you through His Word.
Like Samson, we cannot fend off repeated attacks of the enemy as long as we remain in places of compromise instead of consecration. Thank you, Kenneth. This is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. And join us again tomorrow when Kenneth presents a new reflection titled, The Word of His Grace. Right now, though, we would like to announce that our program, Times of Refreshing, will end its run on this FM radio station on the 28th of September for this season. Thank you so very much for tuning in as often as you have. You can continue to follow Times of Refreshing online at our website, www.timesofrefreshing.asia. There you can listen to any of the archived programs, or you can download our iPhone app so you can directly access the broadcast messages and podcasts right from your iPhone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again for Times of Refreshing.